Good morning, South Carolina, and welcome to the Yard Pro Show, brought to you by Carolina Fresh Farms. I am your host today, Mills Grant, with Carolina Fresh Farms, and it is an absolute delight to be here with you. It is Saturday, March the 9th. What a wet and cloudy, cool day. Just what we need. A little bit more rain in the state of great state of South Carolina. But hey, let's not complain, because at some point we know that we're probably going to see the spigot will be turned off and it will become dry. So let's enjoy the wet weather while we can, the cool weather while we can. If you noticed, I said I am your host, not one of your hosts, but your host today. Our good friend Scott Beard is traveling a little bit today with the family, so good for him, taking some family time. Therefore, I will be flying solo in the studio with you. So, I could use a lot of help from you folks. You know, the format is pretty simple. This is brought to you by Carolina Fresh Farms. We are the your leaders in landscape supply product throughout the state of South Carolina, with 7 stores throughout the state. We're happy to serve you at any time. We're pretty easy to find if you visit us at www.carolinafreshfarms.com. There you will find a link to all the local retail stores, some really good information about how to maintain or select your not only your sod. You know, feel like we are the leaders of sod production in the state, but we do a lot more than that. So we certainly are there for all your needs, whether it be mulch, fertilizers, chemicals, things of that nature to maintain your landscape, but also hardscape materials. So anything to build with, use, utilize, maintain, deal with in your landscape, your lawn, we certainly are here to help you at all times. So stores are open today till noon, which is kind of fantastic. So perhaps you're sitting around thinking of a few things that you need to take care of within the lawn. Don't hesitate to run by and see one of our local stores. Easiest way to find them, once again, is on www.carolinafreshfarms.com. So it's been a great week. Been a cold week, you know, and I say it's been a great week because a lot of things were really, really moving towards spring at a very rapid pace for the first week of March, and I feel like Mother Nature has kind of tempered that for the time being and put us back into where we are, which is wrapping up winter. So a little bit more normal forecast ahead of us, I think, for the second week of March, third week of March. A little bit more normal temperatures, maybe above normal rainfall as of now, but certainly a little bit closer, moderating to where we should be or normally are at this time of the year, because it had gotten quite warm. But this week was cold. Man, we got cold. A lot of talk about this week and how cold it got. And before we get into that, I do want to remind you, you can make my job easier. You can make the show a lot more meaningful to all of our listeners out there if you take yourself from the listenership and turn yourself into a participant. It's easy to do. There are 2 ways to interact with us this morning. You can give me a call at 1-800-347-1063. That's 800-347-1063. And as always, you can hit us at the text line at 71307. Both are open. Both would be appreciated. And we can have a discussion about what's going on within your landscape, potential problems or successes. We'd like to hear it both ways. So getting back to this weather, you know, it's been a big talk this week. It got very cold, in the low 20s for the majority of our listenership. I mean, very cold. And wasn't just one night. You know, we were back down in the 20s the second night. I know a lot of things in the landscape have gone from bright white and pretty to a little different color. Bradford pears being a point. You know, they're in full bloom. And I bring that up because they're so prolific this time of year. You can see those pretty white blooms everywhere. The Bradford pears are quickly... blooms are quickly turning brown. Freeze took a toll on them. Maybe not the end of the world. I actually read a report this week from a local news outlet in the state that the South Carolina Forestry Commission, they had released a technical data sheet a number of years ago, and someone had pulled it up, a local news outlet, and made a report that, you know, perhaps it's time we think about removing the majority, if not all, Bradford pears within our landscape, because something that happened back in the early 2000s is they began to cross-pollinate. It used to be a sterile tree unfortunately not so much anymore. Many of these trees are producing sterile fruit or non-sterile fruit, so they're producing viable fruit, which birds are taking, dropping in other places, and now the Bradford pear, or calorie pear, is what a lot of these go back to. Although they were introduced, gosh, well over 100 years ago into our great country, they are now become somewhat of an invasive species. If you don't believe it, this time of year is an easy time to spot them. As you're driving through the countryside of this great state, take a look. You'll see a lot of those little kind of invasive old fallow farm fields that are just chock full of calorie pear, Bradford pears now. And there's some things that come along with that. One, they destroy kind of our native habitat. Secondly, these non-sterile off types that come up that grow have a very large thorn on them. If you haven't run into them in the woods, you may not know what I'm talking about. But if you have, you know that the thorns are so long, so tough that they can wreak havoc even on ATV tires. So if you're one of those that likes getting outdoors, moving around a bit, you know, it's food to think about. But the big question has been, yesterday I spent the day in Edgefield, South Carolina, and it was interesting to hear some talk from some of the peach growers down there. You know, they won't know for several more days what kind of damage was done, but a lot of them are speculating that, yes, we were in bloom with peaches, and certainly that's going to wreak havoc on the peach crop in this great state. So there's the cold weather certainly had some ill effects on horticulturally and agronomically within our great state. But at the same token, may have had a few positive effects. If you're one of those who likes to procrastinate and you haven't gotten that pre-emergent out yet into your lawn, one of the things we really saw is a drop in the soil temperatures this week. You know, soil temperatures and daylight hours are the two things that really control our landscape. They control when the leaves turn colors, when things begin to bloom, when weeds germinate, when it's acceptable to plant your garden. They control so much, those two items. Soil temperature plays a heavy role in that, and the soil temperatures have cooled back down. Last week we talked to you, and we were talking about soil temperatures that were in the 50s, a little bit higher than the 50s for daily averages. 5 days were 55, 52 degrees between Greenville and Columbia. This week, I will let you know that the 5-day average soil temperature for the upstate of South Carolina is in the neighborhood of 48 degrees, while the 5-day average in the Midlands of South Carolina is around 52 degrees. That is important for those who are procrastinating and not yet applied your 007 prodiamine or dimension, whatever pre-emergent you choose, because it's buying you a little more time. So if you haven't done that pre-emergent yet, hopefully this won't be the only time I get to mention it today, but you need to get that out quickly. Our soil temperatures have cooled back down a bit. It's bought you a little more time, but that pre-emergent needs to be applied in time for it to get there, be ready to prevent all of those nasty summer weeds like crabgrass. Folks, we're going to go to the phone lines. We have Chris and Irmo found us, and just like Chris, someone else, feel free to give us a call at 1-800-347-1063. In the meantime, Chris, welcome to the Yard Pro Show.
Yeah, thank you. And you guys are always my go-to guys, particularly with yard and all concerned. But appreciate your show. Listen, I was going to ask you a quick question. Pampas grass or pampas bushes or whatever you want to call it. Is this a good time to prune them back right now? And then the other question is, we've got some desolated areas that we would like to put in some pampas bushes. The way they grow so fast, can I take some of the, can I uproot some of the existing pampas bushes to grow them that was my question.
Sure.
My two questions from you yesterday.
Yeah, and you know, that's an ornamental grass that we don't see as much as we used to. You know, last week we talked a little bit, if you were listening, Chris, we talked about some of these, you know, what I consider like the old heirloom, plant varieties you would see in an old farmstead or in your grandmother's yard. And pampas grass is one of those that you just don't see as extensively as you used to. And I think the reason being, it was a lot of times it was planted in an area that wasn't necessarily the best area to plant it. So it overgrew its area. So to answer your first question as far as pruning, yes, you know, if you are going to prune it or you want to cut it back and thin it out a bit, now is the time to do that. I mean, we really should have done it maybe a month ago. But you still have some time with this cooler temperature. I mean, I know y'all got pretty frosty down in Irmo as well, right, this past week?
Right, yes. So, yes, it was.
It was rather chilly, right?
Exactly.
So, you know, I found myself several days. I was, you know, leaving the house in Greenville and wound up in the Midlands and in that area several days this week, and it was kind of nice. And by the time I got back to Greenville, it was cooler. That was during the day. But the interesting thing is in the morning, it seemed like your lows were almost as low as they were in the upstate of South Carolina. So that slowed the plant down. You certainly have time to get out there and get it pruned. But I would do it very quickly. You know, I would not put this off more than another 7 to 10 days because it does seem like the temperatures are going to moderate somewhat this week, be in the 70s. And, you know, the nighttime temps are only going to be down. I think we got one day, like Tuesday night in your neck of the woods, it'll be 42. So I think the frosts are behind us. The freezes are behind us, I would hope. So things are going to start growing. We want to get it pruned before it starts growing. So go ahead and get it pruned. Get in there, get to it. You know, there's a lot of old dead material in the middle of that plant. So if you get it kind of cut back, another neat thing, and I used to do this, is take a hay fork, stick it in the middle, and pull it up. You know, you're kind of raking it out with something wide like a hay fork, and you can get some of that old mess out of the middle of the plant. Once you do that, if you got an area where you want to plant more, you have free planting stock there in what you have. I would suggest you dig one of those plants up, and you can divide it, much like you would divide bulbs and things of that nature. You're not going to find a tuber or a bulb underneath. But you will see some nice heavy rhizomes. You'll see a fair amount of rooting. So feel free to, you know, kind of use your judgment. Take a look as you divide this thing up and say, okay, this looks like this is enough of a piece of a plant to get started.
Right.
So, yeah, it grows about everywhere. I mean, you know, it kind of contains itself. It's interesting, but you notice it gets bigger and bigger over time, over the years. Once you get a larger plant, if you want to dig one up, divide it out, feel free to do it.
Okay, very good. Great. Thanks so much for your help.
Thank you, Chris. You have a great weekend gardening.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. You know, Chris, I should have mentioned one other thing. I was in Columbia earlier this week moving our home show. You know, last week we had the home show in Greenville, South Carolina. This weekend is the home show sponsored by the Columbia Home Builders Association. I believe they call it the Classic Home and Garden Show in the State Fairgrounds, and we are exhibiting there. So if you'd like to go by and see Marshall, Stewart, Susie, that crowd from the Columbia store, I'm sure they would love to talk with you. They'll be at the home show this weekend in the Goodman Building at the State Fairgrounds, booth 206, I believe it is. So go by and talk with those folks. So a lot of good information, a good time to meet them face-to-face, and believe it or not, if you got a little pesky pest or maybe you need to ID a plant or your particular lawn type, it's a good opportunity for you to get out, put that in a Ziploc bag, take it with you to the home show. Take some good pictures, go out there, visit with our staff, and certainly our knowledgeable staff will be happy to help you not only with your current landscape, but maybe you're planning a project for the future. They've got some nice things on display, some nice hardscape material as well in the booth, so go by and check out the Carolina Fresh Farms booth at the Classic Home and Garden Shows by the Home Builders Association of Columbia at the State Fairgrounds this weekend. We're going to stay with the phone lines. We have Kevin in Simpsonville. Hello, Kevin, and welcome to the Yard Pros.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. So I got a question. This rain, all this rain, kind of has me guessing as to what steps I need to do or redo. So I've got a tipway in the backyard. And I've got a lot of green, it looks like either poa or even annual bluegrass that has just covered the lawn, and I treated it, you know, I tried to put down the 007 in the winter, but it just, with all the rain, I assume that it probably just didn't hold up. And I've already put it out in the, like a week or two ago. Again, am I going to need to do another treatment? And what do I do about the weed control now? Do I try to get rid of it? Do I let it burn off? You know, we're getting the warmer weather.
Kevin, what kind of lawn do you have? Is it
the Tifway, the
419 Bermuda.
Yes, 419.
Okay. So, you know, it was interesting. Yesterday I was back down in the Midlands and had a day of spending with golf superintendents and whatnot for a benefit, and talking with a lot of superintendents, annual bluegrass has really been a nuisance this particular winter and late winter, early spring, whatever you want to call it this time of the year. A lot of that is due to, if you understand the environment POA prefers or where it likes to grow, it loves compacted soils. It likes something that's a little more on the wet side. That's typically where we see it. And if you think about it, you know, we've had excessive amount of rain, even where, you know, I guess you're in the Simpsonville area. I know you've had an excessive amount of rain for a number of months now. POA is very prolific. Boy, that's a tongue twister there, isn't it? POA is extremely prolific right now, and a lot of these folks, you know, there's a way they control it in the golf industry, which is going with a particular rate of a non-generic herbicide. And even those that have sprayed it are now seeing where, hey, this stuff is still growing. I can't get rid of it. Here's the good thing. Let's look on the bright side. I know we have several more weeks of winter, early spring left before we hit these temperatures. But once we hit, you know, 80, 82, 83 degrees pretty consistently during the day, the annual bluegrass is going to go away. It is what we call a winter annual. The henbit. Have you got a little weed in your yard that looks like a purple flower?
I don't have as much henbit in my backyard. That's mostly in my front where I have fescue.
Yeah, exactly. So you're lucky you don't have it. But all of these weeds that you're seeing today, if you see them in your lawn today in Simpsonville, rest assured they are winter weeds. The majority of these winter weeds are annuals. It's all about temperature. So as we get warmer over the next 3, 4, 5 weeks, you're going to see all these winter weeds go by the wayside. So I guess the point is, if you can hold on another 2 or 3 weeks, are you better off? Now, if you really want to try to apply something on the Bermuda alone, and you really want to try to apply something to control the POA, you can use a product out there. It's called Monument. If you can apply Monument, that's certainly going to take care of the POA. However, Monument's not going to do it real fast. It's going to take a few weeks to do it. And by the time we get to those few weeks, who knows where the weather will be. You know, looking at the 10-day for us in the upstate, you know, tomorrow and Monday we're going to be in the 70s, and then we kind of moderate back in the 60s, you know, upper 60s. So we're definitely getting warmer. You're going to see a lot of these weeds play by the wayside. So next year, or this coming fall, make certain that we target our date a little bit better, plan our date better to get the pre-emergent out ahead of the curve, and you should be have better control. So did you use pre-emergent this year?
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah. And that's why I thought maybe this, the excessive rain just
That's exactly, you know, what it
may
is.
Have washed it away.
That's exactly what it is.
So I wonder if I've already put the pre-emergent down in the winter now, do I need to think about possibly doing another application of pre-emergent?
Have you done one yet this year for your spring or summer weeds?
Yes, I did it around the end of February, like the very end of February when you guys were recommending. But then all of a sudden we just got
hammered
more rain and more rain.
Yeah. So
yeah, and I'm also wondering when should I put down the pre-emergent on the fescue?
On the fescue, I would do it pretty soon, if not now. You know, and that you're going to use the 1608 Barricade. But both of those, yes. If you follow our program in the month of May, you will see an application of 1906 Confront 3 Dimension. Dimension in that product is a pre-emergent. So you will see a little boost of pre-emergent applied for a second time in May, and that should get you through the summer pretty good. But you're right, you know, in reference to why we're seeing so much POA this year, you hit the nail on the head. It's the excessive amount of rainfall which we've had. It's just, you know, hey, it's not holding up as well as it has in past years. And plus, there's just more pressure for the POA this year with the amount of rainfall that we've had.
Okay. All right. Well, cool. Thank you. I think I'll just wait it out.
I probably would. You know, that's why I bring it up, Kevin. I think we're at that critical point where it's almost, maybe you should concentrate more on preparing the lawn for spring, summer, and what's coming there. And let's concentrate more on that. And let's just figure out why we got the breakthrough this year in the winter and figure out maybe this fall what can we do differently to help you with that breakthrough for next year.
Yeah. Is the TIF way aggressive enough that it'll pretty much fill in those areas pretty quickly in the summertime?
Yes, it will. Okay, once you get it fertilized in April with that starter fertilizer, you will definitely see it fill in very quickly. All right?
Okay, wonderful. Thank you.
Kevin, you have a great weekend.
Enjoy the show.
Thank you.
You
Bye-bye.
Too.
Folks, you are tuned into the Yard Pro Show today, brought to you by Carolina Fresh Farms. I want to give you a quick reminder that the Columbia Home and Garden Show, I believe they call it the Classic Home and Garden Show, is going on there. Should be cranking up here soon today at the South Carolina State Fairgrounds. Carolina Fresh Farms, the Columbia store, is exhibiting there. They'd love to have you come by the Goodman Building, booth 206, to see them on aisle 200. We're going to go to the text lines and try to get one of these texts knocked out real quick before the bottom of the hour break. Phone lines are open, 1-800-347-1063. And as always, you can text us at 71307. Had a text come in. It says, talk about fertilizing azaleas and other shrubs and trees. Man, we could talk a lot. And we may, when we come back from that bottom of the hour break, a little bit more about it. But now is the time, or between now and sometime in April, you've got about a month now, get that triple 14 wood ace out on all your trees and shrubs, perennials, you name it, and you will have much better growth with fewer problems this summer. There's no doubt about it. So trees and shrubs should be fertilized at least once. We prefer twice a year, once in the spring, once in the fall, and you should be good to go. So any good balanced fertilizer with slow-release nitrogen would be great for you. You're tuned into the Yard Pro Show. We're going to take that bottom of the hour break. You can give us a call during the break. Phone lines are open, 1-800-347-1063. And as always, text us at 71307. Stay tuned, folks. I'll be right back. Welcome back to the Yard Pro Show, brought to you by Carolina Fresh Farms. I'm your host today, Mills Grant, and it is a delight to be here. It is a nice, kind of chilly, 45 to 50 degree Saturday morning, a little bit rainy, more rain in the forecast. Imagine that in the great state of South Carolina. Rain, folks, who would have ever thunk that in the month of March? It has rained, it has rained, it has rained, it has rained. It has been cold this past week, but it looks like a little bit fair weather is on the way for both the Columbia and Greenville area. It looks like partly cloudy skies coming up this week. Temperatures will be in the mid-60s to mid-70s, so should be some happy gardening time is the way I look at it. It's time to get out there, get some things cleaned up, done, finish up our pruning, all that good jazz. Speaking of pruning, during the break, I had a great text question. They found us at 71307. When can I prune my camellias? Fran and Pelzer. Fran, if your camellias are like mine, they are blooming as of now or finishing blooming. So shortly after the blooms fall would be a great time to prune those. That way we can set some good growth and through the summer months and have some more beautiful blooms next winter. So be a little patient on the camellias. Certainly be patient on those azaleas because they have already set buds on the previous year's growth. And if we cut that off, we will not see blooms, maybe none at all. On those. So let's make certain that we don't prune our azaleas and we wait for things like camellias and azaleas until after they bloom. Once they finish blooming, it's fair game. Get out there with the pruners and get to it. We're going to go back to the phone lines. Trey has found us in Lexington. Good morning, Trey, and welcome to the Yard Pro Show.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
No problem.
So my question is about surfactant and if spraying surfactant, which I was told if I did it once a month for a year, it would probably solve my problem. We built a house a couple of years ago, and the lot is really dense clay, mostly red clay and just really dense clay. And when they came in, they basically just smoothed the lot out. They ended up putting, you know, a couple in 2 to 4 inches of sand over that clay, and then they put the sod over top of that. And when it rains, of course, it goes right through the sand, and I can imagine that it hits the clay and doesn't move, and water kind of sits there, makes the yard somewhat squishy, and it just kind of creates a problem where the water's not penetrating that. And so I was told that if I put surfactant down, it would help to break up that clay and help the roots get down and help that drainage work. So what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, surfactants are used to help. In essence, a surfactant typically is used with another herbicide or pesticide. You know, let's talk generally pesticide, not specifically herbicides. But in the general category of pesticides, we have three divisions. So let's talk about all pesticides. Typically, we see surfactants. One of the products that a lot of homeowners continue to use and have used for a number of years, Roundup out there, has a surfactant already added into the chemical. According to the EPA, when a manufacturer releases a product, all they really have to divulge is the actual pesticide that may pose harm to you or to the environment. That's what they have to divulge as the active ingredient. But there's sometimes other things in the jug with that. And one of the things that a lot of herbicide manufacturers do is they put a surfactant in with that chemical to make it work better. The way it makes it work better, basically it helps spread out. Once you make that spray application, these products can help spread the product out across the leaf surface so it's more uniform. It can help cut those waxy layers. So in essence, someone may have given you that suggestion based on the fact that, hey, you can use a surfactant and it'll help move that water a little bit, which to a degree it possibly may. But they also have, and it kind of falls in the same, I wouldn't say the same classification, but one of the things we call or out there are called soil wetting agents. The golf industry has used these for a number of years because in sand soils, what happens, they wind up over the years, inevitably you wind up with some layering of organic matter if you're not careful on how you manage your greens. And then we get what we call a perched water table. So the water hits that real soft sand, goes right through very quickly. But as soon as it hits something of a different resistance, like the red clay, the water begins to back up because it doesn't move through that as quickly. So that's, in essence, right, what's happened in your yard. I have seen this numerous times in my years of being in this industry and consulting. You can use a surfactant, or not really a surfactant. It's kind of similar, but they make specialized soil wetting agents. And they make wetting agents, some that will hold. They're kind of neat because they figure these things out chemical-wise and use chemistry. They make some now that will hold water in like the 3 to 4 inch range. They make some that are what we call penetrants that will flush the water straight through a soil profile as quickly as the water hits. They have them to do all kind of different things, okay? So okay. I would think in your situation, you know, yeah, that's going to help you. The problem is over time, if we don't change that physical structure of the soil, you're going to be continually spraying these soil wetting agents year after year after year to help make this lawn better. The best thing you could do is figure out how to change your soil structure. The best way to do that is core aerification, all right? If you've got 2 or 3 inches of sand on top, if we can core aerify down to that clay and do this, you know, 2 or 3 directions every year during the appropriate time, considering what type of lawn you're growing, then that's going to help you begin to make that soil profile more uniform. Okay. So Empire can tolerate, you know, certainly aerification. We want to do that in your neck of the woods probably around June. And you may want to do one in June and maybe one the 1st of August. Do 2 of them this year. But what we want to do is actually pull cores, because the more we do that, the more likely that we're going to get that profile to be blended and more. The goal is we want it uniform from the top, you know, 6 inches deep. If we can make that more uniform, then you're going to eliminate a lot of this issue you're having with drainage. Does that make sense?
Okay.
In a nutshell?
Any issue with putting wetting agents close to the lake?
Read your label and make certain, you know, the label is the law. I've been getting around and re-educating a lot of our staff, and that's one of the big things I'm harping on this year. The label is the law. So we don't recommend the spray off the label. You, as a consumer, if you do spray off the label, you're breaking the law. A lot of people are kind of chuckling, going, well, who's going to know? Well, you know what? If you kill a lot of fish, they're going to find out, right? Most of these wetting agents, I would think if you stay, somewhere in the neighborhood of 15 to 20 foot away from the edge of the water, as just as a rule of thumb, you're going to be safe. I would do that anyway, just being a good steward in the environment with anything I apply. But the label will tell you as well, most of them should be safe. I don't think there's any toxicity to aquaculture. Shouldn't be an issue. But a good wetting agent, you're in Lexington. You're not far from our Columbia store. You know, feel free to reach out to the Columbia store. If they can't help you, you know, remind them, hey, I talked with Mills on the radio show. You know, can you reach out to him or give me his email where I can get in touch with him? And we can help find you a product. And what we may do is say, hey, can you go out and dig a little bit in your yard, take a few pictures so we can get a better idea of exactly what you're up against so we can match a product to it. But there are some products that can help you immediately now, but they're not really going to long-term fix it, if that makes sense. If you want a long-term fix it, get a little more aggressive on your aerification during the growing season. That's going to be your best long-term fix. All right?
Well, thank you very much.
Hey, great question, Trey, and we appreciate you tuning into the Yard Pro Show and giving us a call this morning.
Have a great day.
Thank you. Bye-bye. You know, Trey, that was a fantastic, very good technical question. Sometimes we don't get into that, but water is so crucial, not only to making plants survive in the landscape, but it can be equally detrimental if we get too much of it or if we're not using it in the proper manner. So water usage in the landscape, to me, is massive. As a matter of fact, yesterday I got a little report from an agricultural entity in our state that I'm not going to say lobby because I don't think that's what they're really more of an advocate for all of us. It's a nonprofit. And one of the big issues is water usage. And the reason I bring that up is using the water properly within your landscape. One, it can hurt and help your plants, but two, we need to be more aware of it. You know, we have an abundance of natural resources in the state. That's why we love South Carolina. But at the same token, we need to be a little more aware of our water usage because a lot of times we're overusing it. So real quickly, before I go to Bob, I'm going to take one quick text because I had a lot of them kind of backing up. I have 25,000 square foot of Bermuda lawn with some areas around the outskirts that have too much shade for Bermuda to thrive. Is there a zoysia that would work well in partial shade and blend with the Bermuda? Of course, preferably with similar maintenance requirements. What's the ballpark coverage and price per pallet? There is one out there. We appreciate this is actually Trey and Duncan. So, Trey, we appreciate the text. Great questions. Cavalier or Royal Zoysia? They're from the Matrella side of zoysia, so they're a finer texture. They're going to closer match your Bermuda. Look pretty close during the growing season, maybe a little off color in the winter when it's dormant, different shades of tan, but not enough to really cause any major issues. The Cavalier or Royal would work great. There's 450 square foot per pallet on any of our zoysias that you buy at Carolina Fresh Farms. And in the Duncan market, that pallet of zoysia is going to run you, depending on variety, anywhere from 240 up to 260, with the exception of Diamond, which gets much more expensive, but it does tolerate a lot more shade. But I think the Cavalier Royal would work perfect for you. We're going to stay with the phone lines. We have Bob in Chapin has found us. Good morning, Bob, and welcome to the Yard Pro Show.
Good morning, Mills. I have an area in my yard that's I keep losing the plants. I planted yews and gardenias and a cube in it. And when I pull up the plant, after it's been there 6-8 months, the roots are completely rotted off of them. And I don't overwater the area. I just water the area maybe once a week. Is there something in that soil that's rottening the root system on those plants?
You know, there's a couple things that could be going on. And although you say you don't overwater, the first thing I would check, Bob, is my physical characteristics of the plant itself. You know, I would, when I pull that plant out of the hole, maybe it's a dead plant, I would dig a little deeper and see, you know, am I hitting water? Maybe I've got a perch water table. I got water sitting right below that hole. And we're just not getting good penetration of water all the way through there. If that's the case, dig a little bit deeper, amend those soils a little bit, and that should help you. But one of my fears, and you know, is the plant actually dying after a certain period of time it's been planted there, or is it, what does it begin to do, I guess?
Yes, it starts to wilt back and starts dying in parts of the plant.
Okay.
And then after a while, it just completely dies.
So like let me ask you this, though. You said in parts of the plant. So do you see, like, one side of the plant begins to wilt and die, and then it progresses to the other side of the plant, or?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So that brings up a whole different scenario as to what it could be.
Now, this is about a 10 by 10 area, And like I said, I've replanted this area. I put maybe 12 or so plants in there of different varieties.
Okay.
And
so the way you described it, where one side of the plant, basically one branch may begin to wilt and die, and then very quickly the next one, then the next one, then the next one.
Exactly.
One of the things that could be, there's a disease out there called Phytophthora root rot. It's P-H-Y, and don't ask me to spell the rest, Bob, okay? I always told my parents when I'd come home with a mediocre or below spelling test, I always explain to them, well, you know, it's a proven scientific fact that the gifted and talented kids out there just have a hard time spelling. So that's
okay,
how
I
justified
like
it, right?
I like that.
But Phytophthora root rot, certain species of plants are more susceptible to others. It is spread through the soil. It's a naturally occurring disease and fungus. It's actually a fungus in the soil. It's naturally occurring. You can find this stuff in almost any soil sample you send in. But what happens, it will colonize and become at such a threat or hits a threshold where it does begin to affect plants. And the interesting thing is junipers are very susceptible to them. A lot of them are. But there are also other plants that are extremely susceptible to this particular disease. And as you go replant it, we need to replant with plants that are more resistant to Phytophthora. Now, if you want to be 100% certain if this is Phytophthora root rot or not, the easiest thing to do is to pull that plant up when it's, you know, make sure it's not completely dead. It won't do them any good in the lab. I think
right.
they charge, don't hold me to it, if I remember correctly, I think a plant sample diagnosis is maybe in the $10 or $15 range with your extension
okay.
agent.
Right.
You need to call your local extension office because you're in Chapin, unless for some reason you just want to drive to Clemson and drop it off at the Plant Problems Clinic, which you can do. But you need to find out when they're going to have an agent going up to Clemson where they can transport the sample for you, which they do quite routinely in every office across the state. But that extension agent can then take that plant. You pay them, fill out the paperwork. They can send it up to the lab, and they will grow off some things and help you positively identify what the causal agent is, why these plants keep dying.
Should I make a drench of fungicide and just pour around each plant?
That's what I was going to tell you. One of the fungicides out there, it's a little bit harder to find. If you run into an issue finding it. I know you're in Chapin. It's a little drive for you all the way over to our Columbia store. But they can find it for you, and you can run over and pick it up when they get it in. It's a product called Subdue. Subdue is labeled for Phytophthora root rot, and it can help. But I will tell you, too, sometimes if the plants are too far, too gone, it's not a miracle worker. It's not going to make that plant miraculously recover. But you may want to treat the soils if it is Phytophthora. You can probably want to drench and treat the soils so that you can plant other plants in there, or you can choose plants that are resistant to Phytophthora root rot.
I've changed around my plants in there. I put some anise in there and some variegated euonymus.
Okay.
So, because I had talked to some other agent, and he said just kind of mix your plants up and you can find one that's more
resistant. That's right.
Yeah, more resistant.
Yeah, and that's if you were telling me the whole plant, Bob, was the whole plant equally, you know, one day it looks great, the next day the entire plant begins to droop at one time, I would
right.
say, hey, we're really looking at a drainage issue. But as I talked through this issue with you, if you're saying one branch or one side of the plant starts and then it progresses through that plant, then it progresses to the next plant beside it, that tells me it could be Phytophthora. It could be this.
Well, that's exactly what it does.
And I've got a good friend. I hadn't talked to him. It'd been over there a number of years, but they had an issue with that in Greenville, and it was going through some older plant material in their backyard. And you know, finally it got to the point. I said, you know, what I would do was they had a long hedgerow, and it kept progressing to the next one, to the next one. I said, why don't you just go ahead and take about four of them out, drenched with Subdue right here, try to get a stop to it, and it seemed to work pretty good. So. You know, that should help you out, I think.
Okay, and that fungicide is Subdue?
Subdue.
Okay, good deal.
It's pretty good, and it's an old chemistry, but works really good on root rot diseases.
Okay,
if you need any
deal.
More help, you know how to find us, Bob.
Thank you, Mills.
Thank you. You have a great weekend.
Bye-bye.
You know, fantastic calls, folks. That's all I can say. The participants that are participating today with the Yard Pro Show has been outstanding as we wrap up the show. I have a fair amount of text messages I would like to get to in the next 5 minutes or so because I think they're very pertinent and very good questions. So, Bob, good luck with your root rot out there. That's one of the diseases. It was good for me. That was a good discussion because it's something I haven't seen in a number of years. I think a lot of our plant material coming from our nurserymen today, a lot of it has been bred or improved so that we're resisting more diseases in the landscape. But the root rot disease sometimes goes undiagnosed. A lot of times it does, but it can wreak havoc, and it becomes kind of a nuisance because you got an area of soil where you really want to grow something, and it just you can't get things to grow. And that particular disease, it's not only is it soil-borne, it moves with water. So as it begins to colonize in one plant and on that root and begins to grow, and it's a fungus, so it spores, and it begins to produce more, as we get these heavy rains, it begins to keep kind of migrating normally downhill with the way water moves, and you'll see it move to the next plant and to the next plant. So let's go to the text lines. Here's a nice text. It says, the neighbors have a field of kudzu. How do I keep it from spreading to our property? That's a tough one. That's a really tough one because kudzu, you know, as you know, is a vine. If you don't know, apparently you haven't lived in South Carolina very long. Kudzu's everywhere. First introduced as a possible forage for our cattle and our livestock, and because it grows prolific, and guess what? It outgrew what our livestock could eat, so it certainly escaped. We see it everywhere. Can be a nuisance. How do I keep it spreading from my property? I think the best thing to do is to use, you know, herbicide and keep a barrier and make certain that we're keeping kind of a little bit of no man's land. You could maybe leave some grasses growing on it, use some broadleaf weed killer type products, spray products, and just keep it sprayed back. I would certainly go talk with the neighboring property owner and just say, hey, this is beginning to encroach on my property. It is a nuisance and invasive species. Do you mind if I try to control it a little bit back onto their property line, you know, maybe, you know, 25, 30, 40, 50 feet into their property line to give you a bigger buffer. But I think a buffer of some type, it shouldn't be that annoying. I don't think it's anything you have to go out there every day and tend to, but maybe 3 or 4 times a year, go out there, do a little bit of chemical treatment and try to keep it knocked back would be my way. As far as pre-emergent things like that, I don't know if any of that would really help you in the long. So I think your best option is just to keep a barrier, a chemical barrier, between you and the neighbor. Is it possible to have a fescue or bluegrass lawn in the summertime if you fertilize and water enough? Certainly, it is possible to have a good-looking cool-season grass lawn during the summertime in the transition zone. So we're talking, you know, southern Greenville County, Spartan parts of Spartanburg County, a little bit of Anderson County, Oconee, Pickens County, those counties. It is certainly achievable to have a good-looking cool-season lawn during the summer months, but there's a few things. If you fertilize and water enough, it's the question. Number one, don't fertilize. You are going to have to maintain the water during the summer if we get in the drought. We'll talk about why I say don't fertilize in a second, but the water, we don't want to overwater. We don't want to water every day during the heat of the summer. We want to water a couple times a week, and we want to give it a total during a week period. We want to make certain that lawn's getting about 1.5 inches per week, okay? That's total cumulative. The best way to get that 1.5 inches is maybe 3 half-inch irrigation events. So we're only talking about watering 3 days a week, 1/2 inch each time, nice long waterings. The other thing we're going to have to do is to keep a fair amount of fungicide on the lawn. Fungicide is going to be, you know, just a given if you're growing a cool season lawn in the South Carolina listening area. Fungicide is a given. You're going to have to use it. Fungicides are only going to be effective 21 to 28 days, depending on what product and the environment that we're in, how much rainfall we get, how humid is it tonight, how much disease pressure do we have. We'll talk a good bit about that as we go through the summer months. Hey, now's, you know, let's start talking more about brown patch. The fertilization, May should be your last fertilization on a, you know, as far as nitrogen, as most people think of fertilization. May should be it, because free nitrogen in the soil is only going to feed Rhizoctonia, which is going to the disease that gives you issues. So that's going to be a tough issue. One last text real quick. Hey, I heard a fella mention pampas grass. Where can I get some plants and start an erosion control area? That I'm not certain how many nurserymen. You may want to reach out to our Anderson store and see if they can do it for you or order it in for you. That might be an option. So call the Anderson store if you would like it, 864-224-4500, and perhaps they can help you out. Folks, you've been tuned in to the Yard Pro Show today, brought to you by Carolina Fresh Farms. It's been an absolute delight to talk with you, and we will talk with you again next week. We hope you have a happy week gardening, as the weather's going to be a little bit milder for you. If you can get out this weekend, do it. If you're in that Columbia market, go to the state fairgrounds. You can see Susie, Stuart, Marshall, the rest of our staff at the Carolina Classic Home and Garden Show, sponsored by the Columbia Home Builders Association. Carolina Fresh Farms will have a booth in the Goodman Building, booth 206. I know they'd love to see you. Get out there and see them. And, folks, we'll talk to you next week.